I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Healthy Mind Matters, where we discuss the important community issues of stronger mental health, emotional wellness, and the growing problem of addiction. Healthy Mind Matters is brought to you by Intermountain Healthcare and Select Health. Here's our host, Maria Chileos, on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Thank you for joining us today for Healthy Mind Matters. We are talking about suicide prevention on this Suicide Prevention Month. And with me today, Robert Loftus. He's a manager of the Behavioral Health Crisis and Stabilization Therapy Team at Intermountain Primary Children's Hospital. And Jessica Curtis, who is a clinical social worker also at Primary Children's Hospital. And thanks to both of you for being here today. And let's talk about what role we all do play. And maybe, Robert, you'd like to start off. Maybe we should first of all talk about how serious this problem is among young people.
Months or years ago, suicide replaced, I believe it was car accidents, as the number one cause of death in Utah for children ages 10 to 17. And the way I like to put that in context is that children don't die very often, but when they do, right now the number one reason they do is suicide in the state of Utah.
So what can each of us do? Maybe we should start out as parents. What can we really truly do to make a difference in our children's lives? And Jessica, maybe you could start on this one.
Yeah, parents play a really pivotal role in suicide prevention for their children. Parents know their children better than almost anyone else. And so they are going to be the main point of acknowledging and noticing when something could be off with their child, with their mental health.
So what do we look for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of what we call warning signs, which could be maybe depression is getting stronger with their child, or they're not being as social as they used to. So maybe they're staying in their rooms more. They're not wanting to do the activities that they used to really enjoy that used to bring them happiness. Maybe they are not doing as well in school. And they used to be like the star athlete or really good in their academics or music, and those things just might not matter to them as much anymore.
So I know that we've gotten so much better at talking about suicide, or at least knowing that we should be talking about death by suicide. Robert, how do we have this conversation with the teenager or a child?
I think it's individual to each teenager. I think it's about, kind of like Jessica was saying, knowing your kids and you as the parent, knowing them better than anyone else. I think that the one of the key things is to not be afraid to talk about suicide. I think it's certainly has a stigma attached to it, less so now than in the past, but certainly still has a stigma attached to it. And I think, you know, not being afraid to talk about it, trying to look for opportunities to talk about it with your kids, I think those things are really key. And, you know, and fortunately right now we have better prevention techniques. We know more about suicide than we've ever known. So there's a lot of hope that we can bring to the table here to help parents.
What does that conversation look like? I think it's one thing to say, hey, talk to your kids about this, but I don't think many parents know where to start. So Jessica, where do we start? How do we have this conversation?
Yeah, when we're talking with parents in the emergency department, we'll usually instruct them to be just really straightforward. And so maybe you go up to your child or the person that you are worried about, and you could say something like, hey, I'm wondering if you've been thinking about suicide. Maybe you say some things that you've noticed and ask what they're thinking and how they're feeling. And kids are really, really open, is what we've noticed. They are able to, maybe they can't express their feelings in that very moment, but they are really honest and they usually open up and start talking about what's going on for them.
I think many parents are fearful that they won't know what to say once they do start having the conversation. Even if they know where to begin, they'll be thinking, what if I don't have all the answers? So what do you tell them?
I think, you know, I think there's a natural tendency to be worried about that. I think it's about kind of looking for natural opportunities to talk about the topic. I mean, unfortunately, it is so much in the news that I think that does present for many parents an opportunity to talk about it. I think the best example I can think of is I was with a colleague at a school district presentation on suicide. And afterwards, a family came up to us and they said, you know, hey, the boy across the street recently attempted suicide. And, you know, we're wondering, how do we talk to our children about that? And I thought that's a great example of sort of a natural opportunity. I mean, it's the elephant in the room. Everybody knows that this young man on their street attempted suicide. And now these parents are asking, how do we approach our children and talk to them? Which is that's a great starting point.
Yeah, I remember having this conversation with my child many years ago. He decided to share on the way home from school, he was in eighth grade, that one of his friends had died by suicide. And I remember at the time just being, now this was years ago, you know, my son's, 28 years old right now. So it's been a long time. But I remember just being, first of all, shocked that we even had to have the conversation. Like, I was taken aback that one of his young friends would have done such a thing. So I'm afraid I was pretty ill-equipped to handle the subject. Is that what you see a lot of parents still facing? Just being shocked and not, we hear about it happening, but I don't think we still expect it to happen in our schools, in our homes, in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming for sure. And it's something that you don't, maybe lots of people don't know, like naturally, they don't plan on having a conversation with their child. They don't grow up practicing what to say if this comes up. And so it can feel scary and overwhelming because it's a really big topic. So it makes sense that it's sometimes harder to think about, talk about.
Go ahead, Robert.
I think that often, you know, we underestimate how much the kids are already talking about it and already know about it. I think many of the prevention measures that have been started in the state have, you know, gone to most of the schools. Inevitably, every high school or every middle schooler that we talked with, you know, knows about some of the prevention efforts that are out there. So, if that's any help to parents, I think that's a good starting point. Is like, hey, you know, you had a presentation about the Safe UT app, you know, which we'll talk about in a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And that can be a good starting point as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. If there's someone listening right now who maybe needs help right now, we want to make sure that they are aware that there are crisis lines that can help you right now. And if you just need somebody to talk to, let's give them those crisis lines. 1-800-273-TALK. And as you mentioned just now, the Safe UT app has really proven to be a huge success, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's been a phenomenal success. I mean, the legislature's provided a lot of funding for that. And it's the way kids communicate now. So it's an opportunity. You can text, you can call. And it's, you know, it's confidential. It's also, you know, they follow the same HIPAA guidelines and rules that hospitals and other healthcare providers use. It's a great tool. And inevitably, children know about it already. They've had presentations in their schools.
Right. You mentioned we've come a long way in our prevention efforts. And one of those things that you're talking about is what's happening in the schools, correct? And what other things have we done to really try to make a difference?
I think one thing we've done is we know a lot more now about suicide. I think we used to think of suicide as sort of a byproduct of depression, which of course it is in some ways. But I think we've fine-tuned interventions to be more aimed at the suicidal crisis as opposed to just at the depression. And I think that's really helped us to know, hey, this is how we help people who are having these suicidal thoughts. We've known how to help people with depression for a long time, but this is aimed specifically at these kinds of crises.
Right. Do you have numbers to show or research to show how much you have actually helped when it comes to intervening and actually these preventative measures, how much they have actually helped? Is there a way to know how that's working?
I mean, I think that much of the research that's been done, it's still in the preliminary stages, but for example, we were involved in a project with UCLA that we piloted in the last couple of years at Primary Children's. It was called FISP, which stands for Family Intervention for Suicide Prevention. And just looking at the preliminary numbers from our hospital and from other hospitals around the country, I think that they've demonstrated that that, you know, is an effective intervention for families and teens to, you know, work on these suicidal kinds of thoughts and feelings. And in particular, some of the follow-up contacts that they've had with families have shown that it's an effective way to think about suicide prevention. And we can talk a little more about some of those elements of that.
Go ahead and just mention some of them.
Jess, you want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we really wanted to focus on was a strengths-based approach. And so during a typical crisis evaluation, most of the things that we do talk about are risk factors and triggers and things that are going on for the child and family. And so once we started doing the FISP intervention, we wanted to focus on the strengths. And so we wanted to have the parents and the child identify what they're really good at and what their family is really good at so that we can start like implementing that hope. So it's a hope-based that the future is going to look bright and that they already know what they're good at and that we can build on those strengths.
All right. We need to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk more about those risk factors and how we do build on those strengths. And you are listening to Healthy Mind Matters on KSL News Radio. We'll be right back.